You have been listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, October 28th, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team tonight is Eliza Yurkoff and Althea Billings. The producer for this broadcast is Eliza Yurkoff, and our engineer, the incomparable Althea Billings. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Eric Alatis, Frida Ross, Alex Gonzalez, and Eric Tegadoff. The director of the Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News on KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM, K2A2BH Philomath at 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River at 91.9 FM. I'm Ron Bronson.
And I'm Eliza Yurkov. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our illustrious, outstanding members. If you would like to become an illustrious and outstanding member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Coast Range Radio.
From the Coast Range Association, this is Coast Range Radio. I'm Michael Gaskill. We are on the brink of an irreversible climate disaster. This is a global emergency beyond any doubt. Much of the very fabric of life on Earth is imperiled. We are stepping into a critical and unpredictable new phase of the climate crisis. Those are the opening sentences of the 2024 State of the Climate Report, led in part by scientists at Oregon State University. Now, I'm willing to bet that not a single person listening to this needs to be convinced that fossil fuel-caused climate change is a global emergency. I think the real questions we're all asking here are, how bad is it? Are we too late to act? And if not, what can we do to force real action? My guest today is one of the co-authors of the State of the Climate Report, Dr. Gillian Gregg. Dr. Gregg is also the CEO of Terrestrial Ecosystems Research Associates. I'm honored to have her on the program today, so let's get right into our conversation. Dr. Gregg, welcome to Coast Range Radio.
Glad to be here. I'm glad you're helping to get the word out.
So let's jump right in. Before we get into the details of the report, there are so many questions I have for you. Tell us first where folks can find the report, and this is an ongoing series, as I understand, so just give us a little bit of background about the report, and then I'd love to hear kind of the executive level summary of the 2024 report.
Okay, well, in terms of finding the report, you could just Google bioscience and Bill Ripple, and it will come right up. And it's a very accessible and concisely written report. The really one-line executive summary is that we've got 35 vital signs, and 25 of them are at their all-time record worst.
Sounds great.
Okay.
Well, let's get it right into it. So talk about some of those signs or signals. Obviously, we don't have time to get into all 35, but could you talk about some of the most concerning trend lines?
Yeah, I'll talk about the top three in my mind. One is that last year, the ocean temperatures finally took a step change out of the range of any ocean temperatures that have ever been recorded. And so that trend that we saw last year has continued month after month all the way through this year, and our ocean temperatures are drastically warmer than have ever been recorded. And it's these warmer waters evaporating into warmer atmosphere is exactly what fuels hurricane intensification. And in fact, hurricanes are more intense, as we've just seen Hurricane Helene or Hurricane Helene, made landfall in the mountainous regions that are precisely thought to be a climate change refuge. Also, Hurricane Milton that just hit, it accelerated from a Cat 1 to a Cat 5 hurricane in only 10 hours. Other factors that are very important this year is that NOAA has reported that we are in the midst of the fourth mass global bleaching event for coral bleaching, and the Arctic rivers are turning orange. So they've been turning orange over the same period that temperatures have warmed and permafrost have thawed. And, you know, of course, we always are reporting on the melting ice. And between the melting polar ice caps and the orange rivers, these are changes. These are global changes that can be seen from space. You know, it's not that scientists are taking these obscure measurements that can't be seen and recording them. There are changes that are happening in the Earth that can be seen from outer space.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And in terms of human factors, the most appalling factor to us is that globally, fossil fuel subsidies have reached an all-time high of $1 trillion in U.S. dollars. We could be, you know, using those funds in the energy transition and boosting the renewable sector.
I think that last part in particular is so important to underscore. I think climate change is finally starting to become visceral for more swaths of the public than just folks like us who have been concerned about it for a long time. But hidden from view is the power structure of the fossil fuel companies. And the fact that subsidies for them are at an all-time high is particularly galling and illustrates in a different way the challenges that we still face.
Well, I will say that there is currently also funding for renewables, mm-hmm. and that the renewable subsidies have come into par. So just last year, there were equal amount of subsidies for renewables as fossil fuels, but it would just be better if all of the subsidies were for the renewables.
Right. And the power imbalance from, you know, it's like, okay, well, now all the racers on the track get equally good shoes, but we've already let the fossil fuel companies get 3/4 of the way through the race. And so it's not enough, as you say, for the subsidies to be on par. You know, we need to be eliminating those entirely along with that entire industry. So I think
great
actually
analogy. I'll use that.
Hey, I just came up with that right on the spot. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I think actually we just talked about one of the signals in there that isn't getting enough attention from my perspective. Are there any others that you think are underplayed or are not getting enough attention?
So another factor that we highlight in the report is this idea that amplifying feedback loops could lead to climate tipping points. And I don't know if you want to go into that in more detail.
Yeah, please, would you?
Well, so climate feedback loops are this idea that as we put CO2 into the atmosphere, well, that warms the planet because CO2 is a greenhouse gas. And because the planet is warmer, that causes ice to melt. All very straightforward. But as the ice melts, that changes the color of the Earth from white to dark ocean. And as the dark ocean absorbs more of the incoming solar radiation. So even separate from raising the CO2, the melting of the ice itself also warms the globe. And that is an example of what we call a feedback loop. And it's not just this ice melt feedback loop, but we came out with a paper earlier this year that identified 28 amplifying feedback loops that all compound each other. So as, for instance, the Earth gets warm because the ice is melting, well, that warming also caused permafrost to melt, which adds more CO2 and methane to the atmosphere beyond just what we're adding from fossil fuels. So that causes even more warming. So all of these feedback loops compound each other. And we have a call out to the Intergovernmental Panel for Climate Change to do a special report on the feedback loops so we can really get a handle You know, we really think we're underestimating the rate at which the global climate could warm because we're not taking into account all of these various amplifying feedbacks.
I'm glad that you put in that recommendation that more research needs to be done urgently on this, because I think at least within the community of people that pay close attention to this, we're familiar with the concept. And something I want to ask you a little bit about later, we'll touch on this, but you hear a lot of folks either really going hard on the doom and gloom about those feedback loops, and then some people really being dismissive of it. And so I feel like I certainly don't have a handle on how to think of them in terms of how seriously.
Yeah, well, the problem with the feedback loops is they lead to tipping points.
Right.
And so a tipping point is the same, like if you're in a kayak and you're kayaking down a river and all of a sudden you come to a waterfall, you go over to the waterfall, there's no way you're going to kayak back up the waterfall. You're never going to get back to that original state.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're reaching a number of tipping points. And one is that of the melting of the ice. At the point where we lose ice, it's very hard to regain the ice, even if we went back to 350 parts per million CO2, because the color of the surface of the Earth is already darker and therefore warmer. And so it's much harder for the ice to build up. Also, as the ice melts, that makes the ocean less salty. And when it's less salty in specific points, it's less dense. And it's the salty denseness of the ocean in specific locations that start the Great Ocean Conveyor Belt that moves the ocean waters throughout the globe so that we don't always have the hottest hot water at the equator and the coldest cold water at the Arctic. It's gradually always mixing. But we have already slowed this Great Ocean Conveyor Belt down by 15%. And there's concern that it could turn off before 2100. And if it turns off, that prevents the Gulf Stream from bringing the warm temperatures to the United Kingdom. And so it could get unseasonably cold, and it could change the breadbaskets throughout the globe of where we are able to produce the food that we need to feed our populations.
Mm-hmm.
So there's many different climate tipping points that are very important, and they're fed by these feedback loops, and it's an essential part of what we added into the report this year.
It's almost like it's one giant system that's all connected, right?
Exactly.
So, yeah. So, you know, like I said right up top, most of our listeners, if not every single one of our listeners, is already extremely concerned about the problem. And with my next question, I'm not trying to put aside those concerns, but just in the interest of an accurate assessment, are there any of those 35 indicators that you feel are positive, and are there any positive takeaways from the State of the Climate Report this year? And then I want to get into actually another depressing question after that. Yeah.
Okay, let's go for hope first.
Sure.
We do have five of our vital signs that are looking great. Okay. One is the fertility rate. The human fertility rate is declining. So it's down to 2.25 births per woman, but we needed to get it down to 2.1 births per woman to get to the point of having a stable population. But it has been in continual decline each year by year. It's not low enough, but it is going in the right direction. The second factor would be that the Brazilian Amazon rainforest loss declined dramatically this year as a result of new leadership. A third factor is that solar and wind energies are on an exponential rise. Gas has leveled off, but coal and oil are still rising. So the fourth factor would be that 24% of greenhouse gases are currently covered by a carbon price. And so that's one of our recommendations that we have, is that, you know, we need fossil fuels companies to be charging or to be taxed so that we have funds to cover the catastrophes. Mm-hmm. Currently, the price is only about $20 per ton, and we need to raise this to not 24%, but 100% of emissions should be taxed, and the tax rate should be more on the order of $100 per ton to be able to cover the damages. And the fifth one, which we find quite exciting, is that there are 18 entire nations that have declared a climate emergency. All right, this started with Ireland, went to Canada, Argentina, Japan, all of the EU. So all of these countries and jurisdictions covered, they cover over a billion citizens.
That's wonderful to hear. Those are some substantive things. Actually, since you touched on one of the recommendations, are there other recommendations from the report to share out?
Yeah, we have lots of recommendations.
Let's go through just maybe the top highlights.
Top highlights, obviously, we need to rapidly phase down fossil fuels as the top priority, and just making sure we have a sufficiently high global carbon price that I just mentioned. Reducing methane emissions. So methane is a potent, much more potent greenhouse gas than CO2, but unlike CO2, it persists in the atmosphere for centuries. So methane is relatively short atmospheric lifetime of only 12 years. So it's on the order of this decade where we need some action. So drastically cutting methane emissions can slow the near-term rate of global warming and help avoiding these tipping points that we've been talking about. So we believe that unlimited growth is just this catastrophic illusion that we don't know where people got this idea. So in order to combat that, we need to reduce overconsumption, gradually reduce human population through empowering education rights for girls and women. We need to reform food production systems to support more plant-based eating. And we need to adopt post-growth economics framework that ensures social justice. And one final thing we need is much more climate instruction at the K through 12 grades, university grades. We need to raise awareness, improve climate literacy, and empower learners to take action also.
Well, there's a couple things in there that if we had more time, I would want to dig into a little more, but I think for the most part, those are really sound, important recommendations. Something I want to touch on real quick, and then I actually have a couple broader questions for you, is, so we are a 501c3 nonprofit, the Coast Range, so we don't really engage in politics, but politics certainly is important. And I notice that reports like this, your report mentions, you know, the existence of politics, but I feel like that is because it's not a science per se. It is so important to whether and how we solve this issue, but we just don't end up talking about it and elevating it as much as I think it deserves to be. And a quick case in point, and then I'll get to my question, is one thing you highlight in the report is the possibility of societal collapse, or I would say like even degradation. And again, this isn't something often properly explored in climate change research and communication, but if you just look at the amount of political upheaval that has happened around the world with a level of refugees that, granted, we have not seen since World War II, but is absolutely a drop in the bucket compared to what is coming. You know, it's hard to imagine our societies being able to politically, not in reality, absorb that many climate refugees, but politically without, you know, if you think our politics now is toxic, without it getting significantly worse. So I wonder what you all think about that and how we can incorporate messy politics a little more into this recommendations for our solutions. There was a lot there. I apologize.
Uh-huh. Okay. Seems like you addressed three different topics there. One was politics, one was societal collapse, and one was the refugee situation. as far as refugees, that's going to be a massive, massive problem, as we pointed out. You know, if we can't even accept people into our countries now, then how are we going to be able to deal with all of the climate change refugees that are going to be misplaced in the future? I mean, entire island nations are going to be going underwater, and those whole nations are going to be needing to move. We have had two entire towns within the United States borders that have had to move already due to climate change. One was in Alaska and one was in Louisiana. And so we are creating new towns for climate refugees to move, even within the United States. But the one thing that I don't feel is as well considered is this idea of the possibility for societal collapse. Climate change is an existential threat to human civilization as we have been living it. And it's very hard to grasp the concept, but I think the more people are aware of that, the more it will be easier to make these more drastic actions that are important.
You know, I wish we could, I could ask you more outside of the constraints of how I can ask about certain things like politics, but it just occurred to me that it would be really interesting to study societal feedback loops, because I really do have concerns that, like you say, even a degree or two, not the worst case scenarios, can trigger these societal tipping points. And that is something that keeps me up at night, even more than the kind of worst case runaway climate change scenarios. But maybe that's for another conversation. Again, I think most of our listeners will not have to be educated on why climate change is bad, even though we've done some of that today. It's important to, you know, remind folks of the science. I think one of the big questions, and you all actually touch on this in the report, is essentially how do we break through and force the political action to make the progress required? Because ultimately, we can have all the science we want, but if there is not political will, then we won't make those changes. So I wonder what your thoughts are on how we communicate, how we message, how we break through in order to make that actual rapid action happen.
Well, a lot of the groundwork is really in place. Like it is amazing that we have the Paris Agreement, where all countries across the planet have agreed that the globe is warming and that getting, you know, that we must keep the changing temperatures below 2 degrees Celsius. And that's agreed upon and being acted upon. So that is fantastic. We have the Intergovernmental Panel for Climate Change, and they have given us a timeline. They have said we have until 2030 to reach 45% of 2010 emissions. And by 2050, we have to be at net zero emissions. So we have the guiding principles ahead of us, but ultimately the atmospheric CO2 concentrations must stop rising. That's the bottom line graph that we need to watch. So far, there's been no progress. It's just continuing to rise. And once it actually finally levels off, then in order to return to a stable climate system, we must return to an atmospheric CO2 concentrations all the way back down to 350 parts per million. We're up above 420 already now.
So to follow up on that question, I want to just kind of hold on that for a minute, if that's okay, because your report on the communication piece, your report touches on kind of the debate around, you know, sort of, I don't know, for lack of a better term, like this, doomerism or pessimistic language, highlighting the tipping points and the feedback with loops, and, you know, with some people being like, oh, we're doomed if we don't act now, right? Like climate change is an on-off switch. And then some people really leaning into the fact that it's not an on-off switch, that every tenth of a degree really matters. And in some ways, almost in my view, downplaying the severity in an effort to, like, give people a sense of hope. And actually, your report notes that the fossil fuel industry has leaned into tactics of spreading pessimism in order to tamp down climate action, right? Like, if it's all hopeless, why bother? And I would note also that they employ the exact opposite tactic at the same time, you know, telling us that they're creating low carbon forms of drilling for oil, which is a wild thing to say, and everything's fine, and they're great partners. And so never try to miss an opportunity to call them out on their BS. But to go back to the question, I wonder what you have thought in researching for that part of that report around those kinds of different messaging paths, and how you think of it when you're out talking to folks like me about how to message this.
Well, you gotta love Greta Thunberg saying our house is on fire and I want you to panic and act. And so you need all voices, because you can't just say we want to panic and act, because we need to know what to do. Mm-hmm, we need Greta out there saying that our house is on fire. We need the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change to give us the timeline of how much to reduce by what year, so that we know what's going on. We need the newscasters linking the hurricanes and fires and heat waves and floods to climate change that we are seeing now to get the word out. We need to all see that it is warmer, and that the more extreme and costly climate events are here, and that if we're not personally impacted by these events, then we are personally paying for them paying for the damages with our taxes. And we need individual people to keep the conversation going, respectfully helping to get the word out. In the end, Greta is the one that's getting the word out the best to make sure people know that it's really important and we need to act.
So. Yeah. I really appreciate that point about, you know, it's not about one or the other, but it is important that some people are highlighting one aspect and that some people are highlighting another aspect. So I appreciate your take on that. I actually just wanted to ask a couple personal questions as we wrap up. I'm wondering what brought you to climate change research and this work that you do, and what motivates you to keep doing this work, because, you know, it can be very heartbreaking and depressing, of course.
Well, I did grow up in the Ohio River, where all you saw was the factories spewing chemicals into the rivers and the Cuyahoga River caught on fire by spontaneous combustion from all the chemicals that were being spewed into it. So... then in college, I was interested in ecology, and ecology is the study of organisms and the interaction between organisms in the environment. And the most fascinating aspect of the environment is that humans are changing it. So to me, the most interesting aspect of ecology is how the humans changing the environment is impacting the organism. So that led me directly into climate change.
Mm-hmm.
And what motivates me to keep going is that I started this in the 1990s. And back then, people did not think the globe was warming. There seemed to be no possibility that action would ever happen. And so the fact that that there are so many, you know, that we are really in the midst of the energy transition. Lots of money is going into solar and wind. I strongly believe that we will transition to renewable energies. And so I am enheartened by the actions that currently are ongoing.
I love hearing that. Thank you so much for sharing that with me and with our listeners. That really gives me heart as well. Is there anything else you want to make sure gets included in this discussion?
I think just for people who want more detail, go ahead and have a look at the paper. It's by scientists for the public. So we appreciate if you have the time to go read it.
I totally agree with you. It is very readable. I've read a lot of research papers in preparation for this program and doing these interviews in general, and it is a very, very readable paper.
So, and concise. It's not that long.
Absolutely. And one more time, how do people find that?
You could Google Bioscience 2024 Bill Ripple.
Sure.
And it'll come up.
Right. Or even 2024 State of the Climate Report, I bet would get you there.
That'd be great too.
Well, Dr. Jillian Gregg, I am so honored to have you join us. Thank you so much for your dedication and for your work on this. It is so appreciated. And thank you so much for joining us on Coast Range Radio.
And thanks for helping to get the word out. It's very important.
That's it for this episode of Coast Range Radio. Please do me a quick favor and share this show with at least one person. It would help out so much. Okay, Coast Range Radio is a production of the Coast Range Association. You can learn more about the work we do highlighting the forest-climate connection and advocating for major reforms of both public and private timberlands at coastrange.org. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the show or anything else. My email is michael@coastrange.org. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back in a couple weeks.
Portland.
Your investment in community radio can go on with a planned gift to KABU. Consider adding KABU to your will or add KABU as a beneficiary to your insurance and bank accounts. You can change your mind anytime if your circumstances change, but recognizing KABU along with your family and